There's a question I think might be a good inquiry question. It has to do with wherever we get this idea of individual.
Yes, the idea of individual.
Does it come from God, life, or that life force or animating force in a body, or is it in a consciousness node? It doesn't necessarily need a body, but it just sort of has a locus. That wants to call or wants to reference, you know, a self place, like a seed place, as opposed to, you know, spacious.
Sure. It's just a case of nodalism.
Yeah, I was curious because I've been irritated by the one I have.
Oh, sure. Well, if you have one, it's going to irritate you. No escaping that.
Even to the point where, you know, if somebody fails, you know, in suicide, is it really a failure?
Yeah, you wonder.
You know, not that I'm really seriously thinking of that, but it just occurred to me that we enshrine a self.
Good word, yeah.
You know, and exalt it to literally heroic levels.
Oh, yes, nodalism enshrines to heroic levels. Mm. That's a good T-shirt. Yeah.
So that's my
battle now. You nailed it. Yeah. The Buddha didn't do any better than that. I mean, that's better. Nodalism enshrines to heroic proportion. And then you're fucked.
Oh boy. Wow.
Yeah.
Because I do see it. I do see the flavor, the changing flavor of being really caught up in a self node, you might say.
Sure.
And one that just travels light.
Occasionally.
Or moves through lightly. It's like,
yeah,
still has a sense of location, but it's not invested. We're not, it doesn't weigh in as heavy.
Yeah. We'll cover it all, Sven. Hyperspace, bliss. It's on tonight's program.
Oh, is that what he is?
He's just
teasing the ether.
He's fun, yeah. Sven is a teaser.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Yep. That's how it works. Nodalism enshrines to heroic proportion.
Make T-shirts.
You bet.
They go, what, man? What?
That's right. What do you guys talk about? Nodalism. Enshrining to heroic proportion. Makes perfect sense to me. I don't know why they're not getting it.
it's kind of a sub-language.
Oh, yeah.
Gets under the skin, sort of things.
Yeah.
Because it occurred to me too, and after meditation, but more often, the importance that we place upon the human condition is only proportional to the notion that is central, of central importance. And that whatever the life force that animates us identifies with it. As soon as it's not in a body or not identified with it, all those proprietary notions go completely irrelevant.
Yes.
Or reset.
That's right. The proprietary software thrives on uniqueness. Otherwise, there'd be no point in making it proprietary. Mm. So if reality, big word, is actually open source, and we make it proprietary, well, there's going to be a problem of uniqueness. The Buddha's, you could say, realization was, oh, open source. That was the, let's say, cessation of any remaining proprietary interest.
Yeah, there's an ownership investment too in the proprietary.
Absolutely, but uniqueness, proprietary, mm-hmm. heroic proportion, mm-hmm. ownership. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a boundary condition.
Yeah.
Yeah. Open source is not a boundary condition. Proprietary is a boundary condition. Which boundary condition you could say is fabricated or reinforced through narration? Narration is the dispatching of symbology, as in language, to make an assertion. To posit an assertion. And the constellation or the miracle of symbology, sensation, open source, yielding freedom from implication. Well, since it's a unicity, not a fragmented system, well, you could say that it's capable of manifesting, expressing, or being felt in myriad ways, which can and sometimes includes sense of self, sense of durable self. There's no one chain of events or causal ingredients that you could point to say this because of this, this because of this, and this because of this, because it's an ongoing, vibrant, in-your-face, real-time constellation of, you know, pure miracle suggesting that it can't actually be parsed. You can't create boundary conditions and look at symptoms or causal elements that contribute to those symptoms. Because in doing so, right, in finding causal elements that contribute to symptoms, like, let's say, dependent origination, you've gone too far. You've already parsed this with too much authority.
So, relating that to a very strong, I guess, felt sense of moving towards companionship or wanting it.
Yes, right.
That's what I'm wrestling with.
Okay, well, sure. I mean, that's companionship is profound, right? The presence of it, the absence of it, the yearning for it, the disappointment in having it or not having it.
I mean, it's like cool for like years, and then I get a taste of it.
Yeah,
then
sure.
Then it's done. And
yeah.
Then what I'm left with is this irritation.
Oh, sure. Yeah, absolutely.
Wanting and then, yeah, not wanting all the I don't even know how to describe it. The stuff that.
Yeah, that's right.
That creates.
That's right.
Disturbance inside.
Yeah, the accoutrements of living, which include the craving, and the resistance, right? The attraction and the aversion.
Yeah, but does it happen sometimes without that, or like naturally, and it just works?
You mean as in smooth companionship?
Yeah.
I would hope it does. I hope so.
I mean,
Tom Hanks and his wife have been married a long time. You know, what I don't know what to say.
And you since 2015, but much longer than that, if you don't count the actual event.
Yeah, it's Dr. Phil and his wife still together? I mean, I don't know.
I don't know. I don't look up to him.
You're right.
You're too opinionated.
Okay. Well, you know, the biology of being, the warmth of a companion, to talk to play with, to fight with, to sleep with, to eat with, to orient one's life around an intimate, trusting home base. What a profound longing that is.
Yeah, I like the challenge of not always being right. If I'm by myself and I'm thinking, and it's my world.
Oh, absolutely.
It's like, but then, someone comes through the doors and it's like, hey, what's this?
Mm-hmm.
And the vase falls off the pedestal and smashes to the ground.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, things that seem to have their, just conclusion are really not so solid, but you don't know it until you're in an environment that challenges it, in a sense.
So, yeah, that's right. You're free to be an asshole unless someone, steps into your atmosphere and gives you a little feedback.
In a sense.
It works for me the days I'm alone.
Mm-hmm. Even though one like that might want to call themselves a portal.
That's right. Yeah, call yourself a portal. It's a little
for hot air.
It's a little more pleasant. Yeah.
And excrement.
That's right. That's right. You're just a sulfur sphincter. You're a fissure in the earth.
Oh my gosh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh God.
Yeah. I mean, some people crave and thrive upon close companionship, intimate or strong network of friends, and others are capable of thriving and being somewhat solitary.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Hey, that, the fondness, the attracting force for, let's say, being with someone, meeting with someone, exploring relationship, if it's strong enough, then, it can sometimes act as a point of inspiration for us to, let's just say, hone our persona,
mm-hmm.
right? Hone our capacity and willingness to present as an intimately available partner, intimately available human.
That's you hit it right there.
Mm-hmm.
I can be somewhat easily distracted.
All right.
When that part is in the background and it's hungry.
Oh yeah. Sure. As the reliance that we place on the narrator, the reliance that we place on the projection of individuation. As that relaxes, then the radiant nourishment of present experience becomes more palpable. Not just noticed, you could say, psychiatrically or emotionally or somatically, but, you know, noticed in a, well, a curiously immersive manner. So that what we call the physical is a symptom. What we call the emotional or the mental, you know, is a symptom of something that's, well, glowing, a glowing plasma, right? Mm-hmm. It's the glowing plasma which is real. The outgassing of the glowing plasma as self, as body,
tip
right?
The iceberg.
So. Yeah, those are, that's the outgassing. Those are symptoms of the glowing plasma. And, you know, if there is a spiritual adventure and if it's worth, you know, climbing on the back of a unicorn to take that spiritual adventure, well, you could say it's the discovery that this is a, you know, glowing or radiant plasma without without boundary, without without part.
Yeah, and oftentimes it's like there's some neutral thing that happens. It's like, go, yes. Don't go, yes. Stay? Yes. Move?
Sure.
Yes.
Sure.
What?
Of course.
That's not helping.
Yeah.
As you wish. It's like, what?
Absolutely. As you wish. Yeah. I mean, the impulse field is not really asking you your opinion.
Right.
It's not.
Like, this is meaningful and substantive. Yes. This has no meaning at all. Yes. What?
Yeah. That's right. You know, by relying on language and narrative and story and causality and explanation, we're placing our bets on, you know, Ethereum, a, you know, a whatchamacallit currency, right? An etheric currency. Loyalty on Ethereum. And naturally, we're going to be disappointed when we seek to be nourished by or made whole or find a place of relevance in Ethereum. It won't work. It doesn't satisfy. And it's not like, you know, I mean, clearly we suffer the symptoms of unsatisfactoriness. You know, that's life is suffering, right? 101. Yeah.
As you're talking, it's almost like trying to be satisfied by an image in a mirror.
Oh, yes.
And expecting something other than exactly what it's reflecting.
Uh-huh.
Which is what
yes.
you're projecting.
Uh-huh. That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. Sure. Now I want more. Now you're just going to get a reflection.
That's, yes. Right. Yeah. You see, if craving is dependent on circumstances, outcomes, or deliverables, certain unsatisfactoriness in that itself, even without getting a disappointing deliverable, just being reliant upon deliverables at all has a certain you know, unsatisfactoriness in it. Because then one imagines oneself to be individually existing, sensorially existing, and in the mood to, you know, assuage discomfort or to satisfy craving. Jesus, I mean, if your life is to assuage discomfort or to satisfy craving, you're fucked.
Mm-hmm. I know that I purchase something I crave.
Yeah.
And then hold my belly for having consumed it so quickly.
Yeah.
amplify that with relationship and expectation. Forget it. And I have chosen the solo path more than I have chosen the companion path because of that inevitable cycle of this is not ever going to be satisfied.
Okay. I mean, yes.
I guess that's easier for me to see in other, but maybe it's true all the way around.
Yeah, I mean, I respect your self-assessment. Not quite that accurate, but not because you're lying, but because it's impossible for it to be accurate.
Right. I picked longitude and latitude.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You've got, that's
I
right.
I said, I am here.
Yeah, that's right. You've chosen the cross streets and you're like, I'm here. Uh-huh. Yeah, sure you are.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, in my own so-called, you know, story of relationships, one, relationships failed, right? Relationships that lasted, relationships that didn't. You know, guess who the dickhead was? It was always me. Mm. Yeah.
So did you find a way of coming to terms with that?
Well, not voluntarily and not agreeably. If I could trace a path of some degree of emotional maturity in myself, which is bitty, bitty, bitty small, mm-hmm. but even a little bit helps, the unfolding of grievance, confusion, codependency, addiction, intimacy disorder, and that's just for starters, you know, the unraveling of it, slow, arduous, painful process, repeat, slow, arduous, painful process, repeat, mm-hmm. never could or should have been accomplished by the likes of me. So, you know, maybe life helps you out. It kicks your ass from here till Sunday and reveals to you, to me, to one, the ways in which we are withholding or protecting or preserving, mm-hmm. how we enroll our own imagination and the presence of another in that distortion.
From being possibly fully available.
Yes, that's right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so our capacity for, you know, affection and resiliency is compromised by, you know, fear and conditioning and wounding and ego, just general egomania. Woof! Yeah.
Trying to find a word for it earlier today, and the word weary came up.
Yeah, sure.
I kept saying tired. It's like, no, I'm not tired.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I'm not tired. I'm weary.
I'm really tired, but I'm weary of this cycle, this pattern that just keeps...
Good sign. Because the weariness, you know, I would say just we're playing couch therapy with each other, right? So the weariness could very well be a sign that some place in you that was just not available mm-hmm. has become available. Mm-hmm. And so symptoms, mm-hmm. right, of an inner shift can feel and look all ways.
Oh, that, I'm hearing that as the awake place is weary of that pattern that's not so awake.
Okay. I mean, you can qualify it that way.
Even though the life doesn't have an investment per se.
Yeah.
What it's animating.
Yeah. I mean, you could call it, you know, karmic. You know, you can use any kind of system. You can find a tarot explanation, an astrological explanation.
I'm trying to keep it as simple as possible in this very complex head of it.
Well, I would just say cracked open.
Yeah. Yeah. The cosmic egg is.
Yeah, cracking open. And so there's a different depth of availability that is weary of its own repetition, its own pattern, its own defense and compensation, right, activities, behaviors, and reflexes. And so that's a good sign. To be weary of oneself is, you know, doesn't necessarily feel great, but good sign. Mm-hmm. Weary of oneself.
Yeah.
Doesn't it evoke a certain spaciousness? Less to defend.
Yeah.
Less to promote. Yeah, greater elasticity of being.
That sounds a lot better than the word depression.
Yeah, hi. They can go hand in hand. You know, there's nothing's mutually exclusive around here. Yeah. And I think, you know, the recognition of a certain degree of powerlessness, which, though, is exalted in, the 12-step community, is still really, really, really hard to come by.
Powerlessness.
Yeah. To see firsthand.
To realize.
Yes.
That's a more true place to stand.
Yes.
Than this semi-autonomous kingdom.
That itself. Asshole.
Yes.
That's right. Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, there's a certain yielding, right, that occurs. And with it, you could say elasticity, spaciousness, availability, a deeper capacity for intimacy. It doesn't mean we're perfect. Lord knows that is, you know, not going to happen this lifetime. But the capacity to, a deeper capacity in oneself to no longer, or to less so, be at odds with the mirage of oneself, well, makes you a cooler guy to hang out with, right? Truly a more intimately available, more present human being to hang out with than someone that might be, you know, too often distracted, too often heady, or too often superficial. Mm-hmm. The shockwave, the progressive shockwave of powerlessness permits us a vehicle to yield. Mm. And now we become more interesting. Again, we're playing, you know, armchair psychotherapy.
It doesn't float in a sports bar, crowded sports bar so well.
But yeah, that's right. It may not float in a crowded sports bar. But I would say that our pheromonal sensitivity can pick it out.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Sure. Can. I mean, we will find, let's say, comfort, trust, interest, availability when we meet, you know, a human being that rests in themselves with a little less guile. Yeah. So it is, you know, it's a kind of psychic pheromonal availability, a psychic pheromonal attraction. Tino Massaro. Sorry. Let's build an enlightened society, the three of us.
So you listened to the series. What was there, 5 parts to that YouTube? Were they long? I only caught like...
Oh, of our friend Eshwar?
Yeah.
Yes, I was doing client billing, so yeah. I could, you know, yeah, I sat through and listened to the whole series of them. Yeah.
Oh, is this ones he had before coming?
Well, no. He and
starting to make them.
Yeah, he and Joel had their first meetup yesterday. I don't think anyone physically attended, but Joel was cool and kind enough to use, I think, a Zoom, application we've been on before.
I see.
And I think he invited some, you know, friends that he knew to join them.
In that manner.
Yeah, he didn't invite me, but that's because he has good sense. And so they, you know, they recorded, video snippets with
him. Did you discover them, or what did he send Did he advise you or something?
When I first learned of them?
Yeah.
That was just a meetup announcement.
Oh, but I mean the YouTubes. Did you get notifications through?
Oh, Suzanne, I found them because right, she's our professional sniffer.
That's right, Suzanne.
Yeah.
She found it on YouTube.
She'll find out anything about anybody.
Yeah.
So she sent out that link. And Beth had gone to see his former YouTube channel, which was not so focused, it was whatever. But this is a new one that I guess...
Oh, he had another one.
Yeah, whatever wasn't. But this one, I think, is now, dedicated to him as a so-called enlightened being and, a teacher of wisdom.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what a pair, that pair. Mm-hmm.
Quite a pair.
Yeah. Yeah, it's very interesting.
Yeah.
Quite a pair. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, the strongest note that I got from that whole presentation was an investment in a self went from very strong to... I don't know if the word neutral, to like no pull to stay or to remain, with the one exception, the encouragement of the friend saying, "Hey, let's work with this energy," or the child that says, "Hey, Dad, just sit in the same room with me, would you? You don't have to do anything or say anything." Yet. Without the usual desires and commitments that, say, a father would have, or even a typical so-called enlightened person that wants to spread it far and wide, like a Wayne Dyer.
Oh, yes, right.
His was very consciously intending to have the largest amount of people affected by such and such a teaching or wisdom to raise.
That had a different flavor, though. I mean, that was a very psychologically oriented, heady.
The reason I brought that up is because it was specifically motivated or designed to raise up the human condition or vibration, where Eshwar, he's not that invested in wanting to or not wanting to do something, per se.
Well, it certainly doesn't seem as though it's coming from some ego source. And with Wayne Dyer, I'm not so sure.
Yeah. I mean, I, having read that one book of his, which had to do about his kind of I can see clearly now, wake up moments throughout his life, I found it quite intriguing, but it looked very humanocentric, you might say.
Sure.
Invested in going from a not-so-awake human to a much more awake one, where it's much more intriguing for me to go from the investment in that center to a place that doesn't have so much of that craving thus finding it intriguing when you run across it here or there, right?
Yeah, it's a different trip than the,
it's I wouldn't call it light per se.
Yeah.
But it's light on self.
Sort of, yeah.
Yeah. It doesn't really offer you a bigger, better self, I don't think.
One of the interesting dare I use the word traps and challenges. It's like shoots and ladders, right? Let's say we encounter a unique or interesting being, whether enlightenment is the moniker or whatever the hell it is. Well, then we become kind of interested voyeuristically in their so-called experience.
Yeah.
We become interested in the meat.
Yeah.
The human as the meat. So if their appetite is changing and their sleep habits are changing and their affection for their wife or their children are changing, if they are promulgating that there's, you know, very little holding them into the body anymore, you know, then that becomes another, you know, another comic book. Sure. If I'm someone that's been in search for Nibbana, cessation, Buddha, da 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 da, and I find, you know, a curious fellow or woman, you know, down the road that claims to have had a certain experience, well, I think my, you know, prayers are answered. And so all of these things are a lot of fun. I mean, that's what part of the, you know, the spiritual game, the spiritual pageantry, right, has to offer, is exotic distraction. And why not? You know, it's thrilling. It's like binge watching whatever the hell you feel like binge watching.
You know, I think though also it's that one has gotten caught up in things before, and so one, me, you know, it's like you don't want to be fooled again or whatever, or you want to really size it up from different angles. You know, like, is this a real thing? Is this, you know, is this another one of those stories of, what's his name, the shrink that wrote the book about the Don, what are the guy?
Yes,
the
yes.
God? No, okay.
John Sherman, and John what's Sherman. His name? Yeah.
Yeah. so it's like there's different ways of looking at it because, I tell you, we can be fooled, you know.
Yes, and if I may take it a little, kick the ball a little further down the street.
Yeah.
Let's say some stage we're in this to find a realizer, to orient our path and practice and education around a so-called realizer. And that's, you know, both fraught with great fun and great peril, as we can see, right?
Yeah.
I would suggest as we mature in this regard, we're not so hungry to find a realizer as we are to realize. Mm-hmm. Who counts? You count. Nobody else counts. And while there are, of course, interesting people, you know, that come and go, or interesting people that may be in your vicinity, or ones that you need to fly across the oceans to meet, like I've done, you know, where this takes you, my bias, is less interest in the other.
Sure.
And more abiding interest in one's own direct, immersive,
no doubt, yes,
capacity.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. Otherwise, you know, to persist and pursue in the thrilling naivete of pursuing and finding a so-called realizer who acts 20% like the Buddha, 60% like the Buddha, 90% like the Buddha, is just adolescence.
Well, especially if you expect that there is some power that you're going to suddenly absorb from that.
Well, that's, of course, that's right. Yeah.
You know, it strikes me that there are certain people that have gone through this path on Earth something seemingly organic. I mean, you can say everything's organic, I guess, but I mean,
everything is organic.
Something changes at a point in time that's really distinct, and others can see it, you know. And there's all kinds of people, sick people and others, that are saying, oh, yeah, you know, and they're pinpointing when things change. But I think they're posers to a large extent.
I think so.
But I think there are people where that happens to. And, you know, I think, for me, the classic example that I know, to me, is Eckhart Tolle.
Yeah.
Where, I mean, he was going through tremendous psychological stress.
And so should he have, the asshole.
Yeah. And then, boom, he can't even explain what happens. He just knows that it was like, you know, daylight coming, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, it sounded absolutely like hell before.
Oh, yeah.
And then he was delivered. It almost sounds like,
he was delivered
in the right place in the brain.
Yeah, an aneurysm in the right place.
And like you said earlier, like a crack in the egg.
Yeah.
In the loyal and familiar sense of individuation, which, you know, is accompanied by or buoyed by time and space and orientation and birth and physics and life and belongings and beliefs and superstition and sensation and emotion and personal story and aspiration and frustration, and I'm only just scratching the surface, right? This curious sense of individuation can be, and we look at Eshwar's so-called experience or Eckhart Tolle's experience, you know, Jeannie Zandi, of course, you know, gets way too much mileage out of the Dark Night of the Soul thing.
Oh. I haven't listened to her enough to know that.
And so, you know, ordinary human experience can be a, let's just say, a hell on earth.
Yeah.
Yeah. And sometimes it appears that folks are delivered. They have a mutant disindividuation experience that appears to be somehow causally linked, if not chronologically linked, with a high degree of I can't take it anymore.
Yeah, right.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I'm wondering if he went through that. Did you get that sense that Carlos was like, I can't?
Yes, that was part of his story.
I mean, it's certainly the knife to the arm and all that.
Yeah. Well, that's enough, yeah. Right.
You know, that would seem to imply that, but he seemed to be almost indifferent about that. You know,
well, actually, the knife to the arm was after
the, yeah, was the, it? I thought
the event, like,
there was something funny.
I could be here or not be here.
Yeah.
Hard to know. Yeah, it depends on how you read the garbled message mm-hmm. of what, you know, occurred chronologically, as if any of it did. I mean, the whole thing could be in a ruse.
Or, like you said, it could be seen as more as a vector than a
that's right.
timeline.
That's right.
So basically, you can,
yeah,
you know, go anywhere, but it's not necessarily dot to dot, you might say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, sometimes consciousness likes to have, forgive me, rough sex with you. And, you know.
That's right. You go, wait a minute, there's not even a hole there. There is now.
And you get, you know, you get taken.
I know, that's terrible.
You get taken out.
You had to go there.
I mean, that's how rough, when he said rough, it's like,
yeah.
You know, we're you know, 4,000 holes.
That's the sign we put on the door says, go there.
Oh, boy.
Go there. Go ahead, go there.
Yeah, yeah.
Don't hold back. You know, these stories and symptoms of someone else's so-called realization play right into our semi-conscious hunger for distraction and deferral at any and all cost. You know, getting to see that and see it clearly, it's like, oh, places the onus back on you, not that there is a you, but can perhaps assist us in weaning ourselves from the fascination or the interest or the mimicry of, you know, someone else's so-called spiritual accomplishments. I mean, if we're not prepared to say, fuck them, then you know we're just going to remain in a codependent loop with circumstances and events, with sensuality, and be fond of the apparent symptoms of somebody else's emancipation, someone else's invulnerability. It's mutant worship. It's been going on for a long, long time. And, you know, appreciating Joel's very enthusiastic and sincere interest and fondness for what he believes he has found in his friend. I mean, that's, you know, that is to be, let's just say, respected and appreciated.
Sure.
That I see myself in him from some years ago, and not that many years ago. Well, let's just say I've been weaned from it. Where's the guru? Right about here, right about now, right about this. You know, instruction is, that's for humans. Advice, that's for humans. Mimicking extraordinary, you know, spiritual symptoms, that's for humans. Having, you know, clever repartee as concerns dependent origination, anatta, self and not self, that's for humans. Those are all, you know, playthings of the spiritual enterprise.
So you don't think that there's any need or advantage to entertain those kinds of ideas necessarily?
I found it compulsively unavoidable in my own life for a long time.
Yeah.
Less so now.
Maybe less so now because you've been there and done that.
I think having been there and done that helps.
Yeah.
And there's no way to have been there and done that unless you've been there and done that.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really hard.
Do a mind meld or something like
That's
that.
That's right. It's very, very difficult to shortcut having been there and done that.
Maybe Suzanne has the right idea by watching lots of movies.
Maybe she does.
Just movies.
Yes.
Maybe she does.
And I'm far along on that path, too.
That's right.
Modern storytelling.
Movie path.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Nothing happened before now. Nothing's happening now. Nothing will happen hence. The presence of, you know, narrative orientation and association can have its merry way with you. That's not your concern. Looking for symptoms of signs of enlightenment is delusion. Self-assessment from the vantage point of the meat, which is our typical bias, that's delusion. That's deceit.
If the primary driving force is to reduce suffering or eliminate it,
you've already got a problem.
Or reduce pain.
Same problem.
Right, but one's one's informative and the other is like self-created, you might say. The suffering part is got this overlay, but pain is like, yeah, you might want to get your foot out of the fire there.
Well, again, you know, no disagreement with the scenario, but that's a presently appearing hypothetical scenario about elements of consciousness which are all artifacts.
Yeah, the human condition.
Yeah, okay, and those contribute to the hallucination or the investment in what we call the human condition.
Right, so then even the desire to alleviate something or move towards more pleasure or bliss is...
Yes, that's right, because you found too much to have a reaction to.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not trying to say that we go inert or live in a cave or deny chocolate cake to make it look like we're enlightened. I mean, if a good piece of fucking chocolate cake shows up, and you know, you just jump on that. Yeah. So, see, I'm not suggesting that anyone, you know, become somehow idealized with respect to behavior.
Yeah.
I mean, look, you know, the Earth's turning. We're gonna end up, you know, smashing into Andromeda soon enough. Right, so it's not like
but you're just pointing to the folly of it.
Yes, yes.
Leading to some
penultimate
something or other.
Yes, yes, right. The folly of presently appearing hypotheticalism. Yes, that's not to put anyone down or to quiet or shut anyone up. Right? No, it's like, hey, be yourself. You know, sing to your heart's content. I mean, hell, this is a free country still, maybe for a short time. Sing to your heart's content. Yeah. The emphasis is like, what? I know that we can manufacture in an instant on a dime with great poetry and creativity a million and one, million and two, million and three. Hypothetical scenarios about what has happened, what is happening, or what will happen. And we do so with aplomb and no need to stop. But to see through the intoxication of that magical power, who knows? I mean, give it a whirl. Give it a whirl. See through the intoxication of your own magical power to create, posit, and then appear to and train and enter a mythological and etheric universe of your own imagination, then where are you?
Not here.
I don't know. Yeah, and you know, and as far as someone that imagines themselves to be or that might actually be enlightened, who the fuck cares?
It's their burden.
That is their problem. If you're done fetishizing consciousness, they are of no concern to you. Though there's no reason not to go out for coffee. You see, it's the investment that we place in a person, place, or thing in our own imagination. The investment, it's the seduction of becoming, which is the samsara. To, might I say, truly be relieved of it. Well, my bias, once again, you wouldn't sound like the garbled horseshit that Bentinho Massaro layers on thick, garbled, useless nonsense that entrains, you know, a so-called aspirant to higher spiritual experience. This is all carrots. It's just carrots.
Like creating a mini-me, right?
Yeah, that's right. A mini-me, a major-me.
Like me if you follow.
That's right. Look, if you're gonna get down with what this is, what it might be, you're not building community. You're not promising spiritual experience. You're not asking anyone to be authentic or stand in there, whatever they think.
How about sovereign?
They're fun words, and I use them, and yeah, I like them.
Yeah, I've been kind of like enamored by that.
Yeah, I like it too. I do. But or and,
still an
sovereign inspired by, might I say, emptiness, that has one connotation, one feeling. Sovereign as concerns immutability or invulnerability or da 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 da, right. That starts to head in a different direction.
Yeah, I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
Self-preservation.
Yes, of course.
Versus
the
unhooked.
Yeah.
What's the problem? Everything has at least two multiple meanings. You know what I mean? I mean, there's the superficial meaning, and then there's the I guess that maybe that's the secret of using words.
The secret.
Parables.
You know, is that they just go in a different direction. So you can use the same words, But it has an entirely different ground force. You know what I mean?
This shit is very, very evocative. Intoxicatingly so. Words, song, poetry, gesture, shape, prism, blend. Incredible beauty, incredible, distractible beauty to the texture of present experience. I mean, you really are sitting right on the outpouring of Mother Pele's hottest lava. Really, you're just, you know, you're basically dancing, being flipped around at the top of a lava stream, you know, just floating in lava. That's how, you know, profoundly scintillating and intoxicating and novel and strange present experience actually is. We tend to ignore or dilute, not see, filter the intoxicating presence of experience because we're too jammed into narrative, story, symbology, and expectation. We're too fond of the familiar to notice the unfamiliar. Yeah. And we find ourselves not being nourished by the repetition of the familiar. And the weariness, you could say, opens the system
to the unfamiliar.
To the unfamiliar. Mm. Yes?
Right. It's just like having a new crystal and then tuning into a new station.
Okay, yes, whoa. Right. Yes, yes.
Oh, electronics.
It's, yeah. Use the metaphors at your disposal, right? Yeah, the crystal tunes to the unfamiliar, and now you're between bands. And there's not nothing there. There's the resplendent intoxication of the unfamiliar. And you're freer still because you're not trying to bind the unfamiliar to you or you to it. Sovereign.
To change its frequency.
You're not trying to change its or your frequency.
Modulate anything. Yeah.
So you are bathing or surfing in the unfamiliar. Now, should someone give you meditation instruction? God, no. Should someone be espousing how curiously weird they are because they're enlightened? I hope not. You see the distraction?
Yeah, and instruction that comes along, like what to expect and how to handle this.
This is nonsense. It's sig-tatism. It's sig-tatism. It's. I'm telling you, it's gargoyle vomit.
Oh boy. In my head, still in electronics, like a carrier wave with no modulation.
Bingo.
But okay. Once you're tuned to it, you go from static to this silence. But that carrier wave is holding silence, actually.
Okay, I love it.
And that's actually accurate too. Science, you could say, in some way, but I think it's spiritually. If I can borrow Carlos or Eshwar's thing about that high frequency, I think he went to that zero point or something where there was
no idea. He could turn out to be, you know, pathologically disturbed.
Yeah, but take him out of the equation.
Absolutely.
What I got from that is this active emptiness.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is what I heard you describing earlier, and it's like, what is that? And it could be that thing, that vibration that takes static and noise.
Yes.
And overrides static and noise with a truly sweet silence.
Okay.
No prepositions.
I like the metaphor.
No assertions. No invocations.
All right.
No coordinates.
Yes.
Anyhow, I'm done.
Yes. So.
I like it.
So, not that there need be a so, but if there were, so. Sip.
Yes.
Right?
Yes. The egg is cracked and the yolk is just...
That's right. Your yolk is all over the floor. And Jesus, not even Humpty Dumpty's gang is going to be successful.
No, and I wouldn't want them to.
That's right. You wouldn't want to be put back together again. Yeah, this is the devotion here is yokism. Go yoke.
Yeah. With egg on your face, right?
What do you make of present experience of sensation, of memory, of sensory, of time, space, of condition, of coordinate, of emotion, of light, of sound, taste, touch, smell? What do you make of it if you are not distracted by, right, the distortion field? And you're not assuming or asserting to make sense of anything. Wow. The last thing you want to do is fuck that up by giving someone meditation instruction. That blows.
I'm happy to say that does not happen in this room.
Okay.
On Tuesday or Sunday.
On Tuesday or Sunday, that's right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, well, we've outgrown that, thank God. This isn't human. It doesn't mean that, you know, the, call it the field and texture of one's humaneness need be transcended. Who gives a fuck? You see, we stop orienting or grasping at spiritual straws to see how they might apply to the meat, namely myself or the imagination of myself.
Just thinking of how some of the students were offended by, I forget his name, Ron Glick,
mm-hmm.
referring to this as a meat puppet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What do you mean?
That's what we have here. We have the meat puppet with way too much attitude. You see, what could be fun is that usually we, let's say we're entrained to a certain kind of distortion, which is the inertia or the momentum of ourselves. And then we want relief. Mm-hmm. We want explanation, practice, strategy, better ideation, better vocabulary, things to do or think about. Because the meat experience has a certain unsatisfactoriness, right? Life is suffering 101, dukkha at every turn. Now, the dilemma is, as long as that we're moving, you could say, forward or moving under the influence of prior conditioning, well, we drag the snail shell of samsara on our backs with us. So here I have this huge snail shell, and I'm like, oh my God.
Adumare.
Oh my God. Oh my God. And I'm going in search of a guru with the snail shell. And the guru says, hey, take the snail shell off.
And you're like, what snail shell?
Yeah, and you're like, next guru. Next guru.
Right? It will be so vulnerable.
Oh, here we go. Oh God, it's so heavy. Oh God, it's so heavy. And then we think that I have been in a condition, I am in a condition, I hope to be in a different, better, or a lot more lighthearted condition, and would you kindly show me the vocabulary or inspire me through mimicry or whatever, how I might, you know, either take a knife to my wrist or to my throat or jump off a high place or whatever, you know, a catharsis I think I need to manifest so I can, you know, get out of the snail shell. You're like, sorry.
Don't even bother.
even the pursuit and the appetite and the thrill of our idea of realization, the possibility of realization, somebody else's realization, that's just a snail shell.
Yeah, I could see that as a liability.
A liability.
That attention.
Yeah.
That wanted / unwanted attention.
Yeah.
At first it might be like, oh, cool. And then it's like, this is really a pain in the ass.
You are a pain in the ass. Not to me.
You know, because it's contradictory. You know, like say the awakened allure was that somewhat of a no-self creeped in. And then here you have this extra strong self that's manifested from it that people are enamored by.
Oh, yeah.
And now you have a very strong sense in that room of selves wanting the no-self, looking up to the example.
Yeah, that's right.
Of the no-self.
If you're at the front of the room, you've failed everybody. That's stage one. If you're at the front of the room, you've already failed everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Now see what you might be able to do to unwind that terrible error. You don't want to be on the receiving end of anybody's craving. You don't. You don't want to be on the receiving end of your own craving. You just don't.
It's not going to work out.
It's just not going to work out. That's exactly what Mark Hamill said to the new Jedi. This is not going to end up the way you think. Though I haven't seen the film yet. In the short. This is not going to go the way you think.
Never does.
You see, cessation is exactly what this is. It's not earned. You know, at the tip, right, of a suicidal blade. That's just drama.
Yeah, because it's asserting.
This is already
no self that's better than the self.
This is already what it is.
That's what was so disturbing about that guy that sort of committed suicide online. You know, he wrote up, said, "Okay, well, this is it." You know. I said if I had this much pain and this, you know, these conditions, then
yeah.
I'm out of here.
Oh, he videoed it?
No. He didn't
declared.
Video.
He just declared.
He had a...
Yeah, he declared it.
Kind of
yeah.
His last testament, you
right.
might say.
Yeah, he was a kind of... I would say he was kind of a depressed, isolated, semi-poser to begin with. Yeah. So it's not like the world has suffered his loss.
Well, you know...
I hope that's true about me, too.
It must have gotten something, although it seems like it would be pretty low level, some kind of gratification by just simply expressing that, like, there, I said it.
That was, you know, it's trippy out there. I mean, if you're riding around in a van all by yourself and you're, you know, you're holding up a camera and doing, you know, YouTubes about your so-called enlightenment and you've got all these stories to tell, I would say, you know, you should just go out for a cup of coffee with somebody. And then if you're in a lot of pain, et cetera, you know, what the hell? Get the hydrogen tank. Do this thing. The helium tank. Yeah. Do the helium tank. Get out of here. Oh, well. Leave the carcass for the police. We measure, you could say, what contributes to the sense of individuation or the thrill of self is the movement of measurement, of assessment and accusation. We borrow from the scintillating nature of radiant presence to look for and then imbue ourselves with symptoms. It's a hijacking. Who's doing the hijacking? this of us or us of it, or neither or both, or all or none of the above?
That was sort of my earlier question about consciousness without a body. Does it still have a sense of wanting to be separate and individual, even if it's not human or in a body per se?
Well, isn't that
who can we interview?
Yeah. I'm just, and is that where it comes from? Not just it being in a human
and
becoming us, but that there's some seed that tends to happen, whether it's human or alien or...
Well, we have seven...
Blob.
At least on this planet, the one that we're most familiar with, even though superficially so, there's roughly 7.5 billion egomaniacs. So something's up. You know, blame it on the neocortex.
Like that you would never accuse a tree of being an egomaniac. Unless it was in The Wizard of Oz, you know.
Yeah, right. Throwing apples at you, yeah. Yes. Yeah.
That's right. They were very unpleasant.
That's right.
Mean old trees.
Yeah, they were mean old apple trees. That's right. You see how quickly we anthropomorphize and orient to, you know, spatial, temporal symptoms and impulses.
Well, is consciousness an anthropomorphization? I mean, is the whole... I mean, because, you know, after a while, this anthro stuff...
Like the Anthropocene.
Like anthrax. Yeah, like I mean, anthrax. It becomes sort of meaningless. It's like, well, maybe we're just... You know, that's the way we frame things as humans. But... is it just consciousness? So we got 7.5 billion supposedly conscious
nodes,
and it keeps getting smaller and smaller and more distinct, more separate so-called identities to reach out and discover more and more. That's like consciousness seems to just creep in, divide and conquer, or divide and continue to multiply. And...
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't know. Is that consciousness? Is that what exactly is that whole thing that's doing that? That's getting more and more discrete and individualized. I mean, it's all
that the so-called observation can be made through, let's say, experiential impulse or experiential certainty. How do you figure out who or what to blame it on?
Oh.
Or who or what to hold accountable for the chaotic miracle of present experience?
Yeah, and I'm just, you know, I guess it's the search for framing it properly.
Yes, and it's iterative and replicative power.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then the framing. I mean, whatever it is, it's doing it.
Yeah.
You want to call it consciousness? Okay, consciousness it is. And even it's too confident. It's doing it. What? Doing what? Playing into its strong hand of iterative, replicative hallucination, zygotism, photonism, quarkism, Higgs bosonism, bozoism.
That one I can relate to.
That one you can relate to. That's right. What if there's a, you know, a collapse, not necessarily a painful or pre-suicidal collapse, just a casual, ordinary, run-of-the-mill, who-gives-a-fuck collapse in the pressure and presumption of narrative and continuity? Like, how about here. How about, now's good. The reflex to self-admire softens.
All right, you have to have some reference point, which takes you out of here and admire anything.
You are a product, I am. This is a product of its own admiration. As we sip from the chalice of the palace, which is the cessation of self-admiration, nobody has any more questions.
So then Narcissus becomes unemployed.
Yes, the foundational Narcissus is unemployed or made whole by long, long years of psychoanalysis. Freud wins out. Narcissus is healed. One is freed from the pressure, the intoxication of self-admiration. Whoa.
No claim, no blame.
That's right.
So, you know, one of the threads of suffering when it shows its ugly head sometimes is kind of layers of, it might have like regret in it or something, you know, some replay of a thing that didn't go.
Absolutely.
And it's like, so I'm claiming this experience.
Yes, you are.
Maintaining a timeline.
Yes.
And I've got my comparator running.
Yes, you do.
And it's churning out some stuff.
It sure will. And you're getting some good pleasure from it, too.
I'm not sure I'd call it pleasure, but right now it's kind of like humorous. But
that's right.
Sometimes when you're in the thick of it, it's kind of hellish.
Yeah. Well, self-admiration does not care whether your so-called experience is hellish or humorous. It's still like, please tell me more about myself.
Oh boy.
It hurts. It's a little bit of a pinch, but go on. More. The story doesn't end there, does it? Do tell. Mind, right? Narrative mind, discursive mind is the outgassing of self-admiration. You are collateral damage.
So we're like storage in a way.
Yeah, storage and retrieval. You know, repeat.
The aftermath of the supposed happenings, supposed cause and effects.
Yeah, much of these kinds of yogas, the left hand path yogas, emphasize sniffing out the texture of immediate experience, which is the vibratory texture of present experience, not the narrative, not the implication, not the genesis or the explanation, but the vibrancy, the intoxicating vibrancy of present experience. You could say it disindividuates, it de-anthropomorphizes. One is released from the reflex of self-admiration.
Yeah, if there were a pill for that, I think I'd take it.
You are. You're here. You have. It's working.
Well, it does seem that many symptoms of that, you know, is a whole lot of disinterest in a whole lot of stuff. Just no compulsion to. I watch the news, but you know, I only go so far. And a TV show, I usually walk it.
The brighter your self-luminous nature shines, naturally reliance on various forms of externalization may go through a certain kind of shift. That doesn't mean you have to be prepared for the cessation of your life due to disinterest.
Well, I have great interest on occasion, just on, you know, whatever happens. So, and it could be an entertainment venue. It could be a movie that's like, boy, you know.
That's right.
Watch Murder on the Orient Express. And, then, you know, that was, the, what, 84 or 74?
The original, yeah.
And I just loved the movie because it was so, everybody was so who they were. Mm-hmm. You know? I mean, they're all such good actors in that. And the story was interesting and all that jazz, but it was just changing. Just
I enjoy
look at the people. Well, you know?
Self-admiring includes all forms of voyeurism.
Yeah.
All types of selves, huh? Potential yeah. selves as characters.
Well, whatever it is that's pouring in through what you might call your sense windows, and if there's an affectionate regard for the characters and actors, the textures, the personas of whomever it is that you're watching, well, then fantastic. I mean, self-admiration is, it's a stoner, man. Yeah, being satisfied by sports, performance, a good book, quietude, snowfall, shooting a deer right between its shoulders, you know. Hey, getting the codes and pressing the big red button. Yay!
There's beauty in everything, I guess.
Apparently so.
I see that guy riding it with the
hat. Riding boy hat.
Dr. Strangelove,
yeah.
Yeah,
that's right.
What's his name?
Slim?
Was that Slim Pickens?
I think so. Movie buffs, are we? So this is a, I would say, perhaps a useful pebble to turn over, to relish, if not worship, just for fun, the intoxication of self-admiration, admiring self, not just narcissistically or egoically on a small scale, but on a big scale, the entire pageantry, cornucopic crescendo of self-admiration from moment to moment to moment. Oh my God.
And self can be the smallest, big S thing.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it can go to all extremes. It can be so mundane. And it becomes so archetypical or something, or archetypal.
Yes. Yeah, archetypal for sure. Yeah.
Thinking of how instinctive it can be when a parent risks life to save the child without any thought of self or any thought of its own danger.
Right.
So it was almost like a point, a high point of no self.
So yeah.
That vibrationally just took over. Yeah. Or, you know, if somebody wants to reduce it, like Lutz would probably say, it's a biological phenomenon. That's brain chemistry and, you know, whatever.
One hopes that the inquiry and investigation into present experience might supersede the biological.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
for sure.
But, I mean, that could just be a clever bias of mine.
Yeah, well, exactly.
I'm pretty convinced, don't ask me why.
I won't.
That out-of-body experiences
yes.
Function, I don't know if the word independence is an accurate pointer, autonomously and not tethered to or dependent upon the biological imperatives. And then when you come back, your questions are bigger, much bigger than biology. Cause and effect of synaptic events, off-gassings, you might say, sources always coming from some self-referential place, even if it's a subtle. I mean, I'm describing something that's still hooked into.
Well, you
a locus, but it's not completely interdependent upon what science is used to looking at under a microscope from the most subtlest senses. Yeah, you mentioned boson and whatever's smaller than that. And there's that point where it's like, no, none of it has any factor whatsoever.
You appear as a tapestry, but you have no weave.
No weave. Appear as a tapestry. No weave. Hmm. I'm unraveling.
That's the idea.
You know, like that one loose thread. It's like, wait a minute. It hooks on Mercury's sneaker, and then he takes off to deliver a message a million miles away.
Stop!
Shit!
Don't continue.
Took eons to get this beautiful, intricate.
Oh God!
I guess self-entertainment can be as much of a diversion as anything else.
Hey, this is you know, this is open source, man. So,
open source, I like that.
You know, groove as you will.
Any more people join us online?
Oh yeah, we had as many as 20.
Just tonight?
I'm kidding, I'm lying.
They're missing out.
They are missing out. The world's missing out on this. And aren't we lucky? You know, if you are one is speaking with two partnering with, you know, a larger, let's say, audience, then you know, you can run the risk of becoming tethered or anchored, influenced by the waveform of the expectation of, right, many souls. To be able to, let's say, speak your mind or speak your own intoxication. That's a gift. And likely more difficult to do if you have a wider audience of, you know, the pressure of psychic expectation and psychic orientation. Yeah. I mean, you know, the orientation is not from me to you or you to me. The orientation is to delight in your own self-admiration and discover what release may lurk there. And that we can, you know, experiment with that conversationally. That's interesting.
You know, you take it to the extreme. I think of a Krishnamurti.
Yes.
Audience of thousands.
Yes.
Let's say.
Yeah, sure.
And he's there. He's known. Fee!
Yeah.
Fee! You know? And it's like, man, I feel implored to see.
But, yeah.
You know, it's like now the pressure's on.
Yeah. He was the one passionate guy. Yeah, yes.
Yeah, I mean.
He was enthralled, you know, by his own realization and observation,
yeah.
Joy of, you know, living. And he would indeed implore his audience to please see this.
Right.
Please feel this. Yeah.
That didn't make it happen any easier. For
no,
me.
Not necessarily. No.
It's like, oh, he really wants me to see.
Yeah.
What's interesting is it doesn't have to have a high octane sort of hit.
It doesn't have to be Anthony Robbins-ish.
No. It could be extremely ordinary.
Thank goodness.
And then it really comes home to just simply this.
Yeah.
And as opposed to profoundly this.
Yes, one is much better off, my bias, with start with ordinary.
Mm-hmm.
Discover the radiant intoxication of self-admiration. Ride that to zero. All righty, we can finish our program at this hour. Hey, everyone. Thanks for joining us. I hope it was as much fun for you as it was being here.